News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the gyps in the BC. It is Sunday, the 27th of August, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, 69 degrees under fluffy skies in Rochester, New York.
Dank.
Fluffy skies?
Dank.
Well, I thought that was the politest way to put it.
Yeah.
It is indeed Sound Bites. We'll be bringing you all kinds of interesting pieces of information today, as well as answering your computer questions if you give us a call at 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And, of course, for Verizon Wireless customers, it's star 1180.
No, today's a perfect day to stay inside and listen to us.
That's exactly right. You should be
sitting
around.
You don't want to go outside because it's dank, miserable, can't do much, can't do gardening, can't mow the lawn.
Today, the big blue room is the big gray room.
Yeah.
With the fluffy ceiling. So stay in and listen to us. Before we get to your calls, a little bit of news. Internet Explorer, Microsoft has released a patch for the patch.
What patch?
Did I get them all?
No, you forgot a patch.
I think I might have. There's an Internet Explorer security update. The original patch, which came out on Tuesday, as you know, once a month we get Microsoft's monthly visitor, which is all of their patches for the months, which whether you need them or not,
you needed them, a month minus a day ago.
That's exactly right. Many of them are zero-day exploits, which means the bad stuff is actually out in the wild the day that the exploit is discovered. But Microsoft only, they wait for once a month. This last month, they patched Internet Explorer. It turns out the patch causes an even higher risk problem. The browser can crash, and at first we thought, okay, the browser crashes. Why is that unusual? Unfortunately, in this particular case, that can cause a high-risk buffer overflow that could lead to other people out on the internet being able to execute code on your system. Microsoft also posted a security advisory that pinpointed the issue as long URLs to sites using HTTP 1.1 and compression, if that means anything to you. The exploitable flaw affects Windows 2000 with IE6 SP1 and the hotfix installed, and Windows XP Service Pack 1 with Internet Explorer 6 Service Pack 1 and the latest hotfix installed. Now, if you're using Service Pack 2, you're okay, and you should, since public support for Service Pack 1 ends in October. Like I said, this is a zero-day exploit. It's already out there in the wild. The virus writers know all about it. So if you've still got a system running Service Pack 1 with XP, or if you're still running Windows 2000, and a lot of people do on their servers, even at home, you're vulnerable, and you should be very, very careful about this.
I was speaking with a gentleman last night, and he says, yeah, I've still got Windows 98 on my gateway, and I don't get any of these viruses that I keep hearing about.
Oh, no. No.
Well, I got a guy that's still running Windows 95.
Yeah.
That one box that I showed you, Nick,
yeah,
the shop? Yeah. Still running Windows 95. It's on an old 386. You know, he just runs DOS programs. It does what he wants. He's not on the internet. Oh, well.
Guys, if he's not on the internet, he's as good as it gets.
Well, that was the thing, though. He goes, you know, well, I'd like to think about getting on the internet. Not with that machine, you're not. Well, why not? It's got a modem in it. Yeah, but you ain't going anywhere with that.
Well, my daughter has recently begun to realize there are things that she is not going to be doing under Linux that she would like to do under Windows.
And that'd be?
Games and stuff on the internet. So she said, well, Dad, there are things I can't do. Yeah, I said, yeah, but those are things I don't want you to do. That's why, not that Linux can't do them, it's just that I haven't installed it. You can't do those things.
You better watch out. She might, you know, wind up getting Linux books
Yeah, I know, and learning it herself and installing.
And learning more than dad.
It's Ubuntu, so that stuff's not hard to install.
And she could wind up locking you down.
Yeah, you aren't kidding. You aren't kidding. That can happen. All right, Listen, we might as well go to the phones and make everybody happy.
Yep.
Our first caller today is Mark from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question? Mark?
My wife has a Yahoo mail account. She's had that probably 5 or 6 years. Well, just last week she went to log in and couldn't log in. Her login didn't work. So after a couple of days of that, she opened another account in Yahoo. And only a few hours after she had opened up this new Yahoo account, she could not log into that one either. And she actually found a phone number for Yahoo.
Wow.
Thank the Lord for Google.
That's good. Use another search engine to find a phone number for a search engine.
Exactly. And they told her that her personal information that she had entered was different. There was a different birth date than what she gave, different answer to her favorite question or whatever you call that.
Mm-hmm.
It had been changed. How could that be? Is it
someone broke into her account and changed it all? Especially on the free services like Yahoo and Hotmail, they're easy targets because so many people want to create fake identities for sending out bad things.
And they're not very secure. It's very easy to break into them, particularly if she used a common word or a common phrase for her password. It's easy to break those in about 8 seconds.
Or Internet Explorer to log into it.
Right, right. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes where I'll talk a little bit more about security and passwords with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you at 14 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Now, I said when we got back that it's 69 degrees under fluffy skies in Rochester, New York. You happy now? No, you're never happy. When was the last time you were actually happy? I don't want to know.
Ask his mother.
All right, look, here's the deal. I said I would talk a little bit about security. One of the problems with any of the free email services is that the security on them is actually fairly low. Google's is pretty good. The rest of them fairly low. The second part of the problem is many of you are using passwords that are ludicrously easy to guess. If somebody knows you, they know your birthday, they know your dog's name, they know your kid's name, they know your favorite sports team, they know who the quarterback or the pitcher or their whatever is on that team, and they know all of this stuff, and they know who you like. They know who your favorite NASCAR driver is. They know these things. So they will start guessing, and they'll get it. And if they already knew your old password, and you set up an account with the same password, then they already knew the new password. So you got to be very careful. Right now, you can download a program that will crack any Windows password up to 14 characters in less than 10 seconds. Yep. And by the end of the year, up to 16 characters. So if you really want to be safe in your Windows machine, you need a 17-character password. And it can't be a phrase or a series of words. I always tell people, you know, take a book and put in the first sentence of the book or that sort of thing.
An acronym.
They're ready for those things now. Acronyms are useful, yes. If for example, you take the first 17 words of War and Peace and put those in. Or,
Well, then there's social engineering. I had a big problem when I was on AOL. I used to host forums as a community leader.
Right.
And so I had a special privileged account, and people would try to break into my account all the time. It happened twice in about 15 years.
Right.
We're social engineering. They'd call up, "Hi, I'm Steve Ray. I forgot my password. Can you give it to me?" And they would.
Some idiot would. Eh?
Yeah.
Mm. Hello.
Yeah. But specifically with Yahoo, which was our caller's problem, last week Yahoo plugged a huge major security hole that allowed people to break into their email.
Yep.
So it's possibly that his wife was a victim of that attack.
Right, right. All right, we're back to the phones. We have Bob from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning. I am running a Alienware laptop with XP Professional Service Pack 2. A recent problem has arisen. when the computer is on for a while, whether I'm active with it or just letting it sit there, the computer will not respond to mouse clicks. I can move the mouse around, but when I click on something, it doesn't respond. And the only way to get back is to use the power button to reboot the machine.
Is it a USB mouse or a PS2 mouse?
Or wireless.
Or is it?
I don't understand the question.
Is it a USB mouse or a PS2 mouse?
Oh, the touch ball.
It's not a mouse.
No, I'm sorry. It's in touch pad. I used the wrong term.
Touch pad. Yeah, if it was a mouse, you could try unplugging it, plugging it back in, and sometimes the USB will redetect itself.
It also won't respond to the quick buttons like that opens up Mozilla and my email.
Is this a laptop?
Yeah.
There may be a connection problem under the keyboard.
Well, one thing I've done with laptops, and it's helped eliminate a lot of issues, is in the power settings under plug-in, when it's plugged in, you set all those functions to never.
Now, I have every one of, well, let me drop every one of my settings, whether it's always on or any of the other options, I've set them all to never.
Okay. And in the BIOS? So it doesn't go into suspend mode?
I haven't touched the BIOS.
You might want to look in the power settings in the BIOS, because if it's spinning down the hard drive, that's the biggest thing that messes Windows up, is when you spin down the hard drive.
Especially on a laptop, which it tries to do to prolong the battery life.
So you might want to check in the BIOS and see if it's spinning it down there, too.
Yeah, it may take 15, 20 seconds for the hard drive to spin back up again, and you're clicking away and nothing's happening.
And causing a lockup.
Yeah.
In addition, it could easily be something to do with heat and the keyboard.
Yeah. I'll tell you, let me interrupt that. About 2 weeks ago, under warranty, I had the fan and the whole fan assembly replaced because the unit was getting hot, and it was diagnosed by the manufacturer that I needed to have it reinstalled. So a tech rep that they sent to me put a new fan in. But this is a problem that's happened since the fan installation.
Well, maybe one of the little tiny ribbon cables didn't get put back in tight enough when he had the computer apart.
Yeah, you can always blame it on that and have him come back out and evaluate it.
Yeah, an Alienware, if you've got an Alienware laptop, it's a high-end processor. It may well be overclocked. So you've got a hot running system to begin with. Let me start with one simple test. Plug a regular mouse, either a USB mouse or a PS2 mouse. You know, go out and spend the $15 and plug that in and then turn the machine on and run it with that external mouse. See if that causes the same problem. If not, then you know it's got something to do with either the pad itself overheating or the connector inside.
Well, like I said, because the touch buttons won't respond either for email or internet, which leads you to believe it's not the touch pad.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It doesn't lead me to believe that at all. No.
It's a single cable controlling typically a single cable for all the touchpad and ball functions.
Right. Okay. So, definitely try using an external mouse. If that continues to work, at least we've narrowed down the problem, and you can call them and say, look, it's clearly a hardware problem, not a software problem, because the mouse still works.
Yep. Well, you're playing detective.
Yeah, so we're playing detective here, and I would suggest you give that a try and let us know what happens with that. Our next caller, Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a desktop with a laser printer and Roadrunner, and recently we hooked up a router because we bought a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And the router is a Buffalo brand AirStation Turbo G, and both systems have Windows XP. Now, my question is, how do we get the laptop to connect so we can remotely tell the laptop to activate the printer?
You can't. If you want to remotely print, you have to turn on printer sharing on the computer that the printer is physically connected to.
Okay.
Now, the laptop does get on the internet fine wirelessly, right?
Yes, that works great.
Yeah, you need to turn on printer sharing, and you need to
on the desktop
whatever machine that the printer is connected to.
Okay, printer sharing. Where would that be on the laptop?
In the printer properties, it's one of the properties. Yeah. If you right click on the printer icon, go into properties. One of them is sharing, to share that printer out.
Okay.
And then on the other computer, you go to your to add printer and say network, so it looks on the network to find the printer to share it in.
Now, you also have to make sure that the two systems are on the same network.
And the same work group.
The same work group. The other thing
now,
is
where do I do that? The network.
Network identity in properties on my computer. They usually, if
right,
they're
if
both,
you right-click on my computer, you get a drop-down menu, select properties, and you can see network identity
if,
from there.
Since they're both XP, they're probably the same network.
It's, yeah, probably.
Microsoft shifted from, they used to use Workgroup, now they use MS Home.
Right. So it they should
I
be the same.
I wouldn't take it for granted, because depending on where it was set up, you found another Workgroup name.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and all of you at 27 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Scooter talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Speaking of Apple, which we were at the last, it's Apple News Day. Apple has paid $100 million to Creative Technologies in settlement for a lawsuit. Creative had sued Apple, saying that Apple had infringed on their patented technology with the iPod music player. Apparently, Apple has now agreed and has paid them $100 million to settle all legal disputes between the two companies. Apple chief executive Steve Jobs, remember him? Yeah. Said that the agreement ends five lawsuits between the companies and removes the uncertainty and distraction of prolonged litigation. Creative is the world's second largest maker of MP3 music players after Apple, which means they have, what, 2% of the market?
Yeah.
Sued Apple in May, alleging the Cupertino, California-based computer maker had infringed a patent on its Zen player. Jobs said that further that the settlement resolves all of our differences with Creative.
I like his earlier quote. Creative was fortunate to get that patent in the first place because it basically is so broad and so generic that every portable device, including cell phones and whatnot, that use a menu are at risk from this patent.
Yeah, that's my point is, okay, so they went after Apple. They're the big guys. But now with that precedent behind them, they're going to go after everybody. Everybody who puts a menu on a portable device is at risk now.
And maybe that in related news, that's why Dell is discontinuing all of their portable memory
players. The Dell DJ, gone.
No one bought it.
Not that that's a huge loss to the industry as such. We'll be seeing those on Woot any day now. But they're gone. Bye-bye.
And $100 million to Apple isn't really all that much, but it's a huge amount to Creative.
Well, it's a huge amount to Creative, and it's basically pocket lint to Apple. Oh, what was that a trip done? $100 million. I don't even bother to pick that up. But that's what we're looking at right now. Pretty interesting. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question? Ron?
You talked about backing up files.
Mm-hmm.
I was using Nero
to
make backup individual. Is that the best way to do it, or is there a simpler way to back up the entire
system? Well, that tends to be the most...
So if something happens, you can...
Yeah, that tends to be the most tedious way, but it's often the least expensive way because you've already got a CD burner, and CDs are pretty cheap.
Here's the best way. I'm assuming you're using Windows XP?
Yes.
All right, here's a trick for everybody. You know, pass this out. I know you guys have said put it on as a tip, but, you know, that's how I make a living. Anyways, I'll give it out once right here. The best way to get everything, all your email settings and all your files and everything else, within Windows XP, there is the file and transfer settings.
Wizard.
You run that. You say it's the old computer. You create a directory on the C drive. Call it backup. And you tell it to save all the files and settings, and you have it back it up to that backup folder. Once it's done, then you start your Nero program, and you copy that folder to a CD or a DVD, whichever you'd like. Now you have a current picture of all your file settings, all your emails, and all your documentations, pictures, photos, the whole nine yards of that machine.
The problem you can run into with that is if you have a lot of mail or a lot of pictures, it may not fit on one or two CDs or DVDs.
It'll fit on one DVD.
Okay. Four gigs isn't really that much when
but
you get a lot of pictures.
Yeah, but it's compressing.
Yeah,
that
so
it
compresses.
Does it in a compressed mode versus the other.
Right. One of the things you can do with a lot of files is an external hard drive. That
yes.
way you can back up everything onto the external hard drive and then disconnect that hard drive and take it away from your main computer.
Okay.
We've had so many people use a second hard drive in their computer as a backup, and then when their computer fries, it takes the backup drive
mm-hmm.
too.
Okay, because you said something a while back about backing it up and putting it all into My Documents.
Well, one of the problems in backing up is what do I back up? And if you put all your stuff into My Documents, it makes it easier to back up because
then
you only
have one folder to back up.
You know everything is in My Documents.
And that's for the documents you create. Many people put, you know, they have a folder for this and a folder for that and a folder for something else, and that's great, but keep all of those folders under My Documents so you have one place to back up.
The way Windows and Apple by default, your documents go into the documents folder, your pictures go into My Pictures, your music goes into My Music.
Yep.
So back up your user folder,
right.
Which in Windows is in an invisible folder,
it's
in
your
documents
folder.
And settings.
Right.
And on the Mac is in your home folder. So that has everything, all of your email, all your photos, all your music, all your everything.
Okay. Right.
And in addition, if you've got multiple machines on the network, you can copy from one machine to another, take all the files on one and copy them to the other, take all the files from the other and copy them to one. Then you've got two backup copies of that. If you're a DSL customer, you've got disk space up on your DSL connection that you could do that with. You've also got, if you've got a Gmail account, you can mail up to 2 gigabytes of stuff to yourself. So there's 100 different ways to keep stuff backed up. The most important things backed up, and make sure when you copy them to CD, you use good CDs.
And the next step would be to run a backup program that then only does changed files, which then doesn't take so long to back up everything all over again.
Well, even so, with one of those programs, you aren't run once the first time clean, because
right.
then that's how it sets itself up. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco at 50 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Bill from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hello, Nick?
Yeah.
I've got a question. I have a digital camera that I just used to take a short video file in a .mov format. And what I really want to do is I just want to use the audio from it. And is there any way to strip the audio out of a .mov file without just simply running it into a mic and recording it in digital form?
Yeah, there's dozens of programs.
Yeah,
I just Googled it and found three or four offhand.
Yeah, you can strip the audio right out of a .mov then?
Yep.
And what are some of these programs?
Let's see, extractaudio.com, AVI to DVX.com.
Why don't you post
MPEG
the post the Google search?
Yeah.
What he'll do, Bill, is post the Google search to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y.
All right.
Francis would like us to remind you. And if you go to our website, you'll see a bunch of tabs across the top.
All right.
The third tab is links.
All right.
And if you go to links, then the third item on the links list is the list of sites we mention every week on the show.
All right.
And that'll be in that list at today's date.
And you can go check a bunch of them out.
All right. Okay,
it may
good.
Even be in QuickTime itself. I'm launching QuickTime to see if.
But at any rate, he'll post that Google search
yeah,
so that
well,
you can.
I have QuickTime. I just, you know, I have never tried it before, and I just thought maybe you guys could give me a quick help here.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
I'll
there's an export
up.
Command in QuickTime, and if you go into options, you can export it in many different formats, including a audio file.
But you're not. That's not the QuickTime player. That's real QuickTime.
No. Yeah. In QuickTime player.
Oh, all right.
QuickTime player under options.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Options and then export.
Yep.
No, export, then options.
Export, then options.
Yep.
All righty.
Drops a file menu.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Our next caller, Steve from Rochester. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi. I'm waiting in the rain in the car at the RIT parking lot to get my son checked into the dorm.
Oh, yeah. Good luck. I mean, that's great.
And
what's he going to be taking?
Information science, like networking security.
Cool. All right, right. What's your question?
Well, it has to do with laptop security.
Sure, because he's got one now.
Yeah. So I guess you mentioned this on a previous show, and we've gone online and seen the quick ways to use pieces of cardboard and toilet paper tubes to crack locks.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. So what's a good scheme for
the best you can do is the best you can do, and to me the best is every laptop has a Kensington lock on it.
Yes, I recommend those.
And a Kensington locking port.
A Kensington locking port, and
locks
then you can buy
separately.
Locks from places like Kensington, Targus,
Jesse Group.
A whole bunch of people.
We sell them also. You can get combination locks or key locks, and we kind of joke it's a combination you can forget or a key you can lose. But like most locking kits, it's a deterrent that if someone happens to be carrying around a pair of bolt cutters, you're going to get through the Kevlar steel cables. So they move on to the next laptop.
Right. 90% of these things are just a deterrent, as Steve said. And basically, if they look and your kid's laptop is locked and his friend's is not, they'll steal his friend's and leave yours alone.
The bigger thing that we've seen, unfortunately, is students rushing out of class, leaving their laptop behind.
Or they'll rush
out of their dorm and leave their laptop behind. Especially if students are taking laptops to classes to take notes on. And then that can be an annoyance to the teacher for all the clackety, clackety, clackities.
Yes, yes, it can.
Yes, Professor Nick.
Yes, exactly. I teach classes in the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and I find that many times there are it's just noisy, but that's okay. I'd rather have students doing it. And if you get your in the bookstore, they sell backpacks that will also hold the laptop as well as all your books and stuff.
And then you put a padlock on the zipper,
right? And then you also have the lock for when you're in the dorm. So that's the kind of thing you have to do, and I wish it was easier, but it's not. And
don't take a laptop to college.
Well, right, but that's never going to happen. Every kid needs a laptop. They need a machine, at least, and having something that's portable. One of the nice things about the RIT campus is it's fully wired, and that it's very hard to find some place to go that doesn't have a wireless connection. So you can sit in any of the many lounges in the new E. Philip Saunders College of Business and sit with your little wireless laptop and be connected. It's very cool. It's very cool. The big thing you want is a better battery, possibly one that doesn't blow up. Listen, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. Rob Jason's in to give you all the most important stuff you could possibly use at 59 minutes after the hour at Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes past the hour, it's Soundbites.
You are horrible.
What did I do now?
If people could, you know what? You forgot.
I forgot. Camera. I did forget that. That's right.
Yeah.
I hope it didn't catch me making a rude Italian street gesture.
Behave yourself.
Behave.
I just saw the coolest, most disgusting thing. We were talking about the
Steve. We can't talk about that on the radio.
We're talking about the new PlayStation 3 coming out this fall, and one way for Sony to make up the losses on the batteries is to raise the price of the PlayStation 3. But it's a chainsaw controller for the PlayStation 2.
Excellent for Army of Darkness.
And
you can be Ash.
Resident Evil and Doom, all of the games that have chainsaws in
them. Oh, how cool is that?
It's only $30 at Amazon.
That's cool. All right, before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website, soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. We're going to talk about some of it at least.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Every week, as you know, we have a poll. Last week's poll was about the BlackBerry, or as we call it, the CrackBerry. and the question was, do you use a BlackBerry? 351 of you voted, thanks to each and every one of you. Overwhelmingly, 87% of you said no, 10% of you said, huh? And only 12 of you are actually using a BlackBerry. I tell you what, it's hard for me to go around campus anymore without seeing people with BlackBerries. And they're attached to them. They live on them. They get their mail and their web and their
They're also causing medical problems.
I don't doubt it.
Because of that little keyboard. They're sitting there
Nintendo thumb. They used to call it Nintendo thumb. Anyway, this week, Microsoft's has been talking for a while about their, you'll pardon the expression, Steve, while I laugh up my sleeve, iPod killer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Zune, Z-U-N-E, Zune. It's going to be a multimedia player from Microsoft. It's being made, there was a filing about it this week. Toshiba will be making it, and they had to do a filing, and the filing tells all about it. So now we know what it looks like and what it has in it. It's going to have a 3-inch liquid crystal display, a 30 gig hard drive. The really big neat thing about it, I have to say, is it's got wireless. And that's pretty nifty. It has a little DJ function that lets you, I really like this. What are you listening to? Oh, here, let me shoot it to your Zune. Like two people are going to have a Zune. But that's there for that. And that's kind of nifty, actually. That's a neat thing. But anyway, the question here this week is about Microsoft's upcoming Zune media player. And the choices are, I cannot wait, looks interesting, I prefer the iPod, will it work with Linux, I couldn't care less, and Zoohoo. So far, we've got about 83 votes, and I couldn't care less, 88 votes, and I couldn't care less is far in the lead, followed by Zoohoo. Followed by will it work with Linux, followed by I prefer the iPod, followed by looks interesting. And shockingly, I cannot wait has exactly, guess?
Majority of it.
No, how many votes for I cannot wait?
One.
Zero. Zero. You were off by about a zillion percent.
Oh, well.
Zero. And that's this week's poll. Now, when you're done with the poll itself, you'll find a little yellow box underneath the poll. Click on... the link there, give us your opinion, and it takes you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com.
Take care now. Bye-bye then.
And you can then leave an opinion, an actual opinion, as opposed to just a click of a button. And I know how you folks much prefer the opinion part rather than the click of the button part. So far, 8 of you have left an opinion. They've all been clean. I appreciate that. Now, once you're done, please feel free to look around my website. You'll find my three times a week newsletter or my thrice weekly newsletter. You'll find reviews in the forums, which you can't get into unless you're a member and all of that other stuff. But I've got all that stuff online. I'd very much appreciate it if you took a look around asknick.com. That's asknick.com.
A
little slow, but he was there. And then head on back to our website at soundbites.org. Check out our forums. They're wonderful. The people in there are the best
something.
On earth.
You can't throw me off my system. You know what I'm saying? You did it once. That's it. You're cut off after that. No more.
Okay. I apologize for actually thinking you were, on top of things and ready to go and up on it. I had no idea that you're just a creature of habit here.
And coming up next, reruns of Rush Limbaugh. That's what I'm going to put on.
That's what you're going to put on. All right. So do all that stuff, and then we'll be just hanging around here. The Zune Digital Play, it looks interesting. There are some interesting things about it, particularly that Wi-Fi thing, the whole wireless connection. The problem is, I'll guarantee you, it's all WMV media, and it'll all be digital rights managed, and you won't be able to put your own stuff on it or anything.
There's some interesting stuff in the wiki article about it. The first of which, they had to close the article because people kept posting wrong stuff and vandalizing the article.
Yeah, there's a shock.
There are rumors that Apple's going the same thing, Nick.
Yeah. See, when you talk about a multimedia player, what do you talk about?
And Apple. Yeah. Microsoft may have a swapping program available, so all the music you already bought on the iTunes Music Store, you can switch over to the Microsoft Music Store. and not have to repurchase it. There are interesting rumors about what it has in it. And one of the things that we've been waiting for from Apple is that last year someone found a job posting that Apple had put out for basically iPod engineers with wireless experience.
Nice.
So, you know, rumors of an Apple wireless iPod.
Right,
but it's supposed to be the current rumors. These are all rumors because they haven't announced anything yet. But the current rumor is the 30 gig model is going to be $300, which is the same price as Apple's 30 gig model. But it looks like it's going to have a slightly bigger monitor, and then the FM radio built in.
Why is it never AM? We're on AM. I want a built-in AM radio.
AM's too crowded, maybe. There's nothing over on FM to listen to.
I don't know enough about the technology to say if it takes more power or I don't know what. Anyway, we'll go back to the phones, and our next caller is Jerry from Penyan, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question? Jerry?
Switch from a Windows to an Intel iMac, and I love it.
Good, good.
There's one program that I can't get an equivalent on for the Apple, and that's the Adobe Photoshop Album 2.
iPhoto.
I'm using iPhone. I love it, but I have thousands of pictures on the Photoshop, and they're all, you know, categorized and tagged and everything. Is there any way I can run that program on the iMac without having to buy the full Windows system?
Sort of. There is a Unix program called Wine. That lets you.
It's W-I-N-E, not W-H-I-N-E.
Yeah, that lets you run Windows programs in Unix without needing to purchase Windows.
Okay.
Haven't played with it myself. Just been reading things about it.
It works pretty well. It doesn't play everything, but it plays a lot of. It runs a lot of stuff. The problem is, it runs it a little slower. Now, in terms of this, it won't matter much because you've already got now a blazingly fast machine. So the little bit of slowdown will still be a speed up compared to what you used to have, but it is going to play it a little slower.
So I just do a Google on Unix Wine.
W-I-N-E,
that's
yeah.
It's probably wine.org. Wine.soundforge.org. Yeah, or SourceForge.
I don't remember.
Yeah, we'll find it and put a link
Wine
up.
Wine HQ, maybe?
Maybe. There's been a lot of talk about it with the Intel-based Macs. Apple has their boot camp that allows you to reboot into Windows.
Right.
And then the currently shipping product is Parallels Desktop that allows you to run Windows inside your Mac OS so you don't have to reboot. Parallels is a little more convenient because you don't have to reboot. Boot camp is cheaper because it's free. But in either case, you have to buy a working copy of Windows to install.
And it is at winehq.org.
Winehq?
Yep, for headquarters.
.org.
.org, and Steve will put that link up on our site.
I've also been Googling, there's ways to import Photoshop album stuff into iPhoto and see if it can recreate those albums.
Everything I've read says the keys don't transfer over.
Right, but the pictures will,
Right, but it's a key that I'm interested in. Yeah. And Linux, how do I get that? Or Unix?
You have it. The Mac is based on Unix.
Oh.
You win.
Okay. Great. That's it.
There you go.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That is one of the interesting problems with any of the alternative operating systems. They aren't Windows. That's what makes them an alternative. And so when there are programs that are Windows only, you have to find some form of equivalent for the other operating systems. Under Linux, lots of people are putting out whole lists of equivalent programs, and you find most of those things for free. But even so, they aren't the old program, and they don't work quite the same way, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Mac people think, well, I don't have to face that problem. I'm going from Mac to Mac, but you're kind of not anymore because you're buying a whole new underlying architecture. And if the company hasn't put out that program for that new architecture, you're kind of done.
And most of the time, the data transfers easily. In his case, all the keywords he's typed in don't transfer.
Right, that's a problem. Right, I use a program called the GImage Viewer. And it does much the same thing. I can take a picture and I can put all kinds of information behind it. But I don't even know where that information is stored. And you open the picture with anything else, and you don't have any of that stuff. So yeah, I don't know what that's about.
Stored in the metadata that doesn't necessarily translate to any other program.
Yeah, exactly. The G-Thumb image viewer, yeah. All right, our next caller is Brian from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of weeks ago, I have a Dell desktop running Windows XP. A couple of weeks ago, I started getting the Windows logon screen, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, got my name on there, but and I don't have to put a password. I just click OK, and it goes on its merry way.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, why am I getting that prompt all of a sudden?
Because one of the updates changed your logon. And if you go into the control panel under users, and then under that particular user, which would be for you, you can change the way it logs on, whether you see that logon screen or not.
Well, it changes the type of logon you see. If you don't want to have to log on, there's a program that you run. You go to the start menu and run, and you type control space user passwords 2, and you can set an auto login, so it automatically logs in to a single user. This happens a lot of times when Microsoft updates their .NET facility that no one uses anyway.
Right.
But it creates a second user on your computer, the .NET user. So now your computer stops and asks you which user do you want to log in as.
Okay.
So then you have to tell
put
it.
Put that link up there.
Yeah, I think we have that on there. You can go into your user control panel and delete the .NET user if it's there, or set an auto login with the control user passwords too.
Yep.
I don't have a .NET user. I'm looking at that now, but I don't see it. I just have the computer administrator.
Yeah, but even so, the system changed the way the logon is processed.
Yeah, one of the updates changed it to make it stop and think to see whether you have the .NET logon there or not.
Okay, so I just put in run control user passwords too?
Right.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you for your help.
There you go.
You're welcome.
We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you at 19 minutes after the hour. This is indeed Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
On News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
So, Nick, what happened last week while I wasn't here? Anything in particular? I mean, what'd you guys do?
We had a great time.
Last week, we had the great Dan Cole here.
Yeah.
And we admitted that the reason that you weren't here is because you were home hiding under the covers crying like a baby.
Oh, okay.
We weren't entirely certain why, but we knew you were. And if it happens again, I have no doubt that Dan Cole will ably step in to help us finish the show if for some reason you have another breakdown and cry and have to leave early.
You ever heard of a vacation?
I've heard of vacations.
Yeah.
But now you're not on vacation.
Well, Dan Cole can step in if you'd like. But, you know, I mean, I don't think he can handle you clowns.
He's done a masterful job.
Uh-huh.
Masterful.
Yeah. Well, like I'll always say, you know, it's so great to work here at the home. You know what I'm saying? With you three every week.
Okay, you little puppy. You
at home crying.
4-year-old
puppy. I'm getting phone calls from people going, Rob, why are they saying you're crying? Are you all right? Everything all right? I'm like, I'm on vacation.
And not listening to
it. It was him.
You got to listen to defend yourself.
I do not. I'm sorry to break your heart. I don't listen to your show when I'm on vacation. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Then that's why we felt we could say anything we wanted about you. You sure heard what we said the last time?
Mm-hmm.
Have the packages started to arrive yet?
Payback is a bear.
I bet it is.
It's done.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
All right.
I know his mother's phone number.
That's right. And she likes us.
Yes.
All right, before we get back to the phones, Intel is saying they're going to fix their Wi-Fi driver memory glitch. They've announced plans to issue an update. As you know, we were talking about this. There's a glitch in their Wi-Fi driver that could allow someone to take over your machine and own it. Intel has announced wirelessly. They've announced plans to issue an update to fix a flaw related to that set of software, the ProSet, which accompanies the drivers that run the wireless systems on so many PCs. The problem was one of the processes was not releasing file handles, blah, 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 blah. But the fix is listed on the company's website. We will post that fix so that if you are indeed running a Centrino chipset, then you should download that that thing. And in fact, back on August 2nd, Intel issued its regular update for the Centrino chip bundle. that provided patches for three different security and vulnerabilities. So you ought to download that immediately, and I'll pass this over to Steve so he can type in the ridiculously long and stupid URL that's in the middle of that page there. Yes, it's 3.5 lines long. Yes. So he'll make sure he's got it right before we do anything about actually using it. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I've got a login question for Mac OS X.
Yeah.
There are startup items that start up when you log in as your user. And one of them is mail. And the option is to have it hide, meaning that it starts up but stays off your desktop. And it doesn't seem to do that. I've tried everything from uninstalling that startup item from the list to unchecking it, checking the option, and can't seem to get that to just hide itself.
Yeah, I've noticed there's a few programs that won't hide when you want them to hide, which is quite annoying.
Yes, it came from the G4 the same way, and I'm on the Intel, and it carried over the preference somehow, and I can't seem to get that changed.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's a glitch in the way the hide feature works. Have you tried removing mail from your startup items and rebooting?
Yes. Did it, restarted it without that, you know, came back on and logged on and logged off, shut it down, added it back in, logged on again, still doesn't hide.
Yeah. You might be able to write an automated workflow that launches mail and hides it, and then make that your startup item.
Oh, okay. All right.
So you can have a hide all command in there so that after the program starts up, they hide.
Meaning use Automator?
Yeah, Automator is a really neat tool built into System 10 Tiger that allows you to write scripts very easily. It's you build an action. So your action could be launch mail, and then the next action could be hide application.
Right. Okay.
So something like that might work as well.
Oh, great. Thanks. I'll try that.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much. Our next caller is Andy from Bloomfield, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Brought a computer home last week, a new computer, and came with several things. One of them was McAfee antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We activated it.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, although at the time we couldn't find it, a Norton antivirus. My first question would be, which would be more advantageous in what it does, a 2005 version of Norton or the new McAfee that came with the computer?
When it comes to viruses, new is always better.
Newer McAfee.
The newer McAfee over to 2005.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
Son of a gun. Okay.
Danger.
Well, then that kind of negates my other question. I was wondering if I had, well, I already activated the McAfee, and I wanted to find out what I had to do to put the Norton in. Would, you know, just down, if I decided to use it, just download it?
Well, uninstall McAfee.
One, or?
Well, you'd have to uninstall McAfee and then install the Norton product and then go through all the updates from Norton.
And then you're going to want, you once you put the 2005 in, really, they keep nagging you to go to the 2006,
mm-hmm.
and that's the whole Internet Security Suite, which is a piece of junk.
Oh.
And it locks up and slows down more machines that we have found folks that uninstall Norton 2006 because it's a full package, and it speeds the machine up. And then they go to like a McAfee and say Spybot and AdAware and Zone Alarm for the firewall.
The Norton suite tries to do so much that it just bogs your computer down too much.
Son of a gun.
Yepper.
One of the other things to keep in mind is that with most every new computer that comes with a bundled antivirus, either Norton or McAfee, it's typically only a 30 or 60 day subscription.
That's right.
So you have to purchase the subscription extension at the end of that time.
That's right.
One of the reasons we recommend AVG from Grisoft, which is a free antivirus program.
AVG?
AVG.
Andy.
Antivirus Grisoft.
Go to our webpage, and it's under the Security Tango.
And under the links, yep.
And
if
one
you,
of the links
yeah,
are
go
in
to securitytango.com.
Okay.
You'll see a bunch of buttons down the left-hand side.
Yep.
You'll see the Let's Dance button, which shows you how to dance the tango. You'll see my blog, which I haven't written in a couple of days. But you go farther down and you'll see Windows Links for Antivirus, the third one. And that list is Grisoff's AVG. It's a free antivirus program that you can just install and run. There's also a paid version, which automates some things that you have to run by hand in the free version. But I use it every day, and it's great. It's a great program, runs terrific.
Especially considering the news report we talked about a few weeks ago is that 80% of viruses get past Norton, McAfee, and eTrust.
eTrust.
And if I went with this one over here, the Tango, you think that it would pick up more of it?
Well, the Tango itself is how to clean out your machine if you've had a problem. The Grisoft is one of the programs we recommend you use with the Tango. And yeah, it seems that Grisoft and a couple of the others, I've tried to list mostly free software on the Tango site, and Grisoft has a free version as well as a paid version, and it works great, and it's unobtrusive, and it updates regularly, and it catches everything, and I haven't had any trouble with it.
Well, that's wonderful. At the beginning of this conversation, you said go to your website, didn't you?
Well, that would be securitytango.com for this particular thing.
I wrote that down, so that's the one I need to go to.
You got it.
That's wonderful, fellas.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. That's nice. We love it when people think it's wonderful. Yeah. Our next caller is Richard from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
Well, I have a little problem. I don't have any way of sending anything out on email. It seems to be dead. And I do have the AVG tells me that the email is fully functional and so forth, but I can't send anything.
What error message do you get when you try to send something?
Nothing. No message at all. Just things go dead.
How do things go dead?
Well, I'm just looking at it. I send a message, and it doesn't indicate that anything is going, on, really.
Does it stay in the outbox?
Yeah.
What are you using, dial-up?
Yes.
And you're getting connected to your service provider?
Pardon?
You can surf the web?
Yes.
Who?
In order to get onto the Internet, I have to turn it on and off about three times before it'll give me the Internet.
Well, that could be related to why the mail isn't working.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Who's your provider?
Who do you get your dial-up from?
It's I can't tell you who it is right now.
Okay.
Well, there was a change in the way Frontier sends their email.
Well, Frontier is my provider, yeah, now that I'm on the track there.
Right. They changed the way you have to send email a couple of weeks ago, and we're still finding people that haven't done it yet. On the Frontier webpage, they have a description on how to change your email. You have to go into your email settings and change your sending server to use authenticated mail. Otherwise, you cannot send email through Frontier.
Right, very good.
And Steve will put a link to that on our website, soundbites.org. What's it listed under so he can find it easily?
Probably something like Frontier email change.
There's an idea. Whoa. But at any rate, check our website at soundbites.org. Click on the links tab. The third link is about the stuff you heard on the show. And then do a search for Frontier. And, yeah, FrontierNet changes the email configuration. We did that on May 28th of 2006. We talked about that, and it's a link right to the Frontier site.
And how to make the change in your email program.
Right, and there's a link in there to take you right to Internet Explorer, or rather to Outlook Express, or whatever your email program is. So give that a shot, and that should get it to work for you. Not a problem. All right, our next caller is Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
I have a Dell Dimension desktop, not even 2 years old, and a few months ago, the DVD drive, now, we've got both DVD and CD, so one on top, I think it's the DVD, just keeps opening by itself.
Oh, really?
I'll close it, and it'll reopen, and I'll close it, and it'll reopen. And,
it wants to be a cup holder.
Yes, that is one of the many viruses that are running around, has that as a side effect. Huh. You have likely got a virus.
Have you run antivirus software?
Yeah, and we do a scan like just about every day.
Yeah, what antivirus software are you running?
McAfee.
And when was the last time you updated it?
Yeah.
And when was and is it still active? Have you paid for it in the last year?
Yeah.
Okay, you have a virus. You need to go to...
Or some spyware. I mean, there's a number of Trojans.
Or spyware.
Yeah.
But in any case, you need to go to security. Here we are back again. SecurityTango.com.
Gotcha.
And at the Security Tango website...
Dance the Tango.
Click the Let's Dance button.
Okay.
And that will... And then you print that page out... And follow each and every single bullet point in each and every step. Do not skip any.
Got you.
Because if you skip a step in a tango, you're just stumbling around. So,
very good.
And read everything. For example, one of the things that it asks you to do is turn off System Restore. And it tells you what the implications of turning off System Restore are. You need to do it because there are viruses that lurk in System Restore, but you need to understand what the implications are. And then later on, you can turn it back on again after you're done with the Tango if you want to do that.
Let me back up a half a step and suggest maybe the button is stuck in. The button on the front of the CD drive that spits the tray out.
That's possible.
Start with that.
That's good thinking, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, that's the first place I'll check then. Then I'll do the dance.
Yeah.
Okay.
All righty.
Appreciate your help, guys.
Thank you very much. All right. I think we've got time to take Al from Austin, Texas. Al, are you listening to us on the web, or have we got a heck of a skip going on?
No, on the web.
Ah,
cool.
How'd you find us?
I'm originally from Rochester.
There you go.
So.
And you've told all your friends in Austin to listen.
Of course. I'm in the military, so the word spreads quickly.
That's what I like to hear. Tell all the military folks, we love you people. God bless each and every one of you, and let me individually and personally thank you for what you do for our country.
Not a problem. Thank
you. Amen to that one.
Amen. And now you need to call your local Clear Channel station and ask them why the heck they aren't carrying us. All right, what's your question, Al?
Free Flow software comes with Xerox multifunction machines.
Uh-huh.
I've installed it on my XP box and can't seem to uninstall it. It's nowhere to be found in the add and remove programs.
Take a look at your start menu under programs under Xerox. There might be a separate uninstaller there.
Okay.
Otherwise, you might have to go into the registry and do a search.
Well, also, I'm checking Xerox's website. They may have a manual uninstall option for it as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes if you run the installer again, there's an option to uninstall.
Right, but you're saying it's not in add and remove programs.
No, it's not.
Is it not listed under Free Flow, but listed under Xerox? Since they're alphabetical, you wouldn't necessarily see that unless you scrolled way down the list.
Yeah, I went up and down. And
all right.
Even close to that, so.
Yeah.
That's all right, I'll give it a try.
There
Let's
you go.
Go.
And once again, God bless you and thank you, Al. We'll see you. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you at 40 minutes after the hour. You are indeed listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, we've been talking about all the recalls. I got to say, Apple had a little trouble for a few hours with the serial numbers on the batteries. They had a little bit of trouble. You would think that a computer program designed to recognize battery numbers could, well, recognize battery numbers. They do have a site where you can put in your serial number, put in the serial number of the battery, and it will know it. It was recognizing the notebook serial numbers, but not the battery serial numbers. And there was a real problem there. But for those of you who've been trying, by Friday morning, it was working normally. So
there's
you should be fine now.
A lot of speculation that the 100 million Mac users, just everyone jumped on the site and tried to type it in. And so the servers were overwhelmed and databases weren't attaching properly and you know, trying to figure out why and what happened. But, you know, wait a couple hours.
Yeah. And then it was fine. Dell had a similar problem because they were telling people they never used the letter O in their serial number. So anytime you saw what you thought was an O, it was a zero. Yeah, that's not true. There were O's. that caused a lot of confusion for a while.
The zeros are narrower than the O's, but they're tricky.
Well, see, that's why O's used to have slashes through them.
Yeah, I still to this day put a slash through
them. Yeah.
That or a little dot in the middle.
Right. Something to let you know. All right, we're back to the phones, and our next caller is Keith from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
We have a question about iPods. I want to get an iPod for my son.
What? And, not a Zune?
And I'm looking at two things. I'm looking at a Nano at 4 gigabyte at about 250 and change. And I'm looking at the regular iPod at 30 gigabyte hard drive for $50 more. I wanted to know your opinion with regards to the technology. I'm assuming the Nano has a chip as opposed to the regular iPod that has a hard drive.
Right.
Right. So that's it's kind of interesting on their marketing plan. $50 more buys you the next bigger iPod.
Yeah, when you jump from the I'm worried about reliability.
Right. In general, the Nano with a flash drive, so there's no moving parts, is generally more reliable than the full-sized iPod that has a mechanical spinning hard drive. Although the full-sized iPod has a memory buffer, so it'll spin up the hard drive, load your songs into memory, and then shut off the hard drive. And that's how they help.
Yeah, I have to say my daughter's hard drive iPod is exceptionally dead.
Yeah.
And it's unlikely that that would have happened had it been a Nano.
Right. The on the other side of the coin are the different features. The full-size iPod has a bigger screen. It can do video. It can plug into a television. So it's, you know, it's sort of that trade-off between, you know, features and price and performance. And the capacity, the 4 gig versus 30 gig, you know, when you look at just capacity, the $50 is well spent.
But, it is, but my concern is that in 2 years, if it's going to be dead, that's, you know, $300.
Right.
The window.
Well, one thing we're strongly recommending is the extended warranty. For $60, you get a 2 year warranty that will pay for itself if you have any problem. And so it's sort of the catch 22 of extended warranties. When you buy it, you're kind of hoping your thing breaks. So
yeah,
you've
right.
justified expending it.
Yeah.
But the way most of the extended warranties work is that the company's hoping it doesn't break, and so they can keep your money.
Well, so, with regard to hard drives, then, in your experience and opinion, if something's going to happen, is it going to happen in the first 2 years?
Well, what we typically see with electronics, it's within the first 6 months.
And it's all due to droppage.
Right. The biggest thing is dropping the iPod. If you get any sort of ding or dent in it, that basically voids the warranty as what most companies call accidental abuse.
Right.
So we're recommending a lot of people check their credit cards because a lot of credit cards have abuse protection and they'll replace it for you. Or we've had people even try to tap out the dings and that often works.
But
in general, the flash-based iPods, even the Shuffle, which is the least expensive model, but doesn't have a screen, is generally more reliable because there's no moving parts.
Okay, and I hear the music, so I guess I'm done.
Well, yeah, you got a minute.
The other big thing on the Shuffle is that because it has no screen, it's more rugged in many respects, so that you don't have to worry about the screen breaking either. And most people just let their music randomly shuffle anyway, so you don't need a screen to pick which song you want to play.
Right.
Yeah, and 4 gigs, 1,000 songs is a lot of songs.
Yeah,
trust me, you're that's going to be more than enough. Unless you're like me and what you listen to is old-time radio, 4 gig is more than enough.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
No, thank you. We're going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole. Yes, Rob's had another breakdown, is off crying like a baby somewhere. Dan has ably stepped in. I'm Nick Francesco at 49 minutes, at 50 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this, at 54 minutes after the hour, is Sound Bites. Our next caller is Richard from Penyan, New York. We got everybody from Penyan. Well, we got two people. That's hardly everybody. Welcome, Richard.
Almost.
What's your question?
Hi. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I wanted to know on a computer, it was working, then it shut down.
Yeah.
And when it tried to power it back up, all it does is the fans inside just move a little bit and stop.
Sounds like you might have gotten a power surge.
Would that be the power supply gone then?
No, if it's powering up, in other words, if you can, on the back of it, feel the fans and you see the lights coming on.
But it powers itself immediately back off again?
Yeah, fans come on for half a second and the whole thing shuts back down again? Richard?
And it doesn't do anything.
But that's what it does. You turn it on, it starts to, and then it shuts itself all back down.
No, it just just the fan just moves a very little bit. It's a dit, it stops.
And then no fan, no nothing.
No nothing. But it was working fine prior to that, and there was no smells coming out of it like I burned anything. So I think, could it be the power supply?
Yeah, if you're turning it on and it just comes on for a second and then you don't see the fans in the back turning.
Yeah, he says it shuts right back.
Or shuts out. Most likely, yeah, it's a power supply.
Because it's one of those Power Man 300 watt?
Yeah, well, you can go and get, a 400 watt power supply for like $35, I think it is.
Can I put a 400 versus 300 in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
The big thing to check is I'm assuming you have a Pentium 4 processor?
Yes, I do.
The earlier power supplies had a different power tap on it. The Pentium 4 power supplies have an extra four pins.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure you get ATX 4 12V.
The ones I've got have the extra four pin that slides off, plus the 12-volt converter if you need it.
Right. I have extra wires on there.
Yep.
From the power supply, and that's why I couldn't. I have a lot of power supplies around the house, but I don't have anything that will work with that.
Yeah, you gotta get that style power supply.
And it's a 12.
But you can go up to a 400 watt on that.
Okay.
Yep.
And but you think that's probably what it is more?
Most likely, that's where I'd start first.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next caller, Kim from Hamlin, New York. Welcome, Kim. What's your question?
Listen, I'm having a problem with the CD-ROM on my daughter's computer that has XP home with the SP2 on it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to recognize that it has a disk in it. I noticed this when I started to reinstall the operating system for her, and I was able to complete the reinstall using the DVD portion there. But after reinstalling, everything seems to work except for that CD.
There are several things that can cause that. One is if the thing has gotten dirty, if anybody in the house smokes or if there's a lot of dust, it can coat that lens.
We had a horrible computer this week. It was just black and caked on the inside.
Yeah, a cleaner will fix that. You can buy those at any of the cleaning computer kit. Stores.
What's
a CD cleaning kit, yeah. Or it could just be that the CD is dead. That happens to them.
If it's seeing the DVD and not seeing the CD, it makes me think that it might be the CD-ROM that
it's dead. It's different laser frequencies reading CDs versus DVDs, so quite often one half can fail and the other half keeps
working.
Is
the CD and the DVD the same drive? Or are they two different drives?
I believe they're two different drives.
Definitely. It's very possible that the CD drive is simply dead, or it's gotten unplugged.
Yeah.
Well, I checked that. I opened it up.
Then it's pretty clearly got to just be dead. My suggestion is you spend $15?
I mean,
to get a new CD
drive?
Don't
even bother.
Because you can read CDs in the DVD drive.
You got the DVD. You don't need to do that, because a DVD drive will burn both CDs and DVDs. So nowadays, I don't even carry CD-ROM drives in my shop anymore, because the DVD drives have gotten so much cheaper than the, carrying both. It's like ridiculous.
Right. This is a CD read right there. I thought if I had to replace it, I would get a DVD writer.
Yeah, that's your best bet, and then you can do both at once.
Although sometimes the standalone CD writers are faster. If you're doing a lot of CD burning, you may want a standalone CD drive.
Right. But that the normal person rarely needs quite that much. We are done. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. You need to call earlier. Call early, call often. We'll be back next week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, who ably stopped in for Rob Linton, who had somewhere he had to go. He's not hiding under his desk crying like a little girl, at least not yet. I'm Nick Francesco at 59 minutes after the hour. You have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and you know exactly what that is. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.